With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. The wine industry raised more than $1 million for nonprofits. Sonoma County Vintners Foundation recently announced that its annual Sonoma County Wine Auction raised more than $1.3 million that will go to nonprofit organizations around the region. The proceeds will benefit organizations that focus on education and literacy, health and human services, the environment, arts and culture, as well as emergency relief funds. Mark Malpete, who's the Sonoma County Vintners Foundation president and president of Ernie's Vineyard, says, quote, "It's important to our local wine industry that we raise this critical funding to help create a thriving community and also support our neighbors when they need assistance due to unfortunate circumstances." To date, more than $41 million has been raised that directly benefits Sonoma County community members in need. If you'd like to make a donation to the foundation, you can visit sonomawine.com/foundation. And now it's time for today's headlines. Three representatives are looking to expand access to freshly grown domestic produce. Ensuring Americans have access to fresh, domestically grown produce is the goal of the Fresh Produce Procurement Reform Act of 2023. Introduced by Representative David Valadeo alongside Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut and Sherrod Brown of Ohio, it will establish a new mechanism for the USDA to purchase a wide variety of U.S.-grown fresh fruits and vegetables for distribution to those in need. On average, USDA directly purchases more than $2 billion annually of domestic commodities to redistribute out to feeding sites across the nation. However, currently only 5 fresh produce commodities are available within the Emergency Food Assistance Program catalog, and that accounts for just under $6.5 million of purchases. This bipartisan bill seeks to address the shortcomings of the program to offer a wider variety of produce available to those organizations who serve insecure populations. And now here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
Executive Director for VISTA at UC Merced, Lee Bernacki, explains what the VISTA program is and what it's aimed at achieving.
So VISTA, the Valley Institute for Sustainability, Technology, and Agriculture at UC Merced, is mostly focused on developing research and development opportunities with industry and academic partners and training the next generation of engineers and computer scientists and biologists to work on farms and fields. UC Merced has several programs that are designed to cause tech inspiration, but also ag inspiration. So we want to make computer scientists realize that their future is not at Facebook, it's in farming. We want to bring them into Morningstar and seed packing and processing. We want to get them out on the field. So we have several programs that are funded by USDA that are designed to give them that exposure to the main industry of the valley. And then through Farms Food Future Innovate, we are funding graduate students to do exclusive research on ag tech and build those innovations and get connected with industry directly.
VISTA is also one of the partners for the F3 initiative.
F3 is Farms Food Future, and it's an innovation initiative that brings together a diverse and creative, dedicated group of partners. We have the institutions of higher education, UC Ag and Natural Resources, Fresno State, and UC Merced, of course, and then 8 community colleges that are working on upskilling, and a whole host of community partners that are dedicated to making sure that technology serves everyone in the valley and that we're all ready for this climate smart ag transition. F3 is the nation's hub for agri-food technology for climate smart ag.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, at the AgriPulse Ag Outlook Forum this week held in Kansas City, Missouri, USDA economist Seth Meyer discussed the status of the U.S. in major export markets.
We continue to see Brazilian production expand, both in corn and beans. Access to that market now, access to those corn to Chinese markets now that they didn't have historically. And so I think at a global level, when it comes to corn and beans, we're facing increased competition. And that's also why I think you're seeing the volatility narrow, right? There appear to be substantive enough crops that folks aren't anxious about the pricing of those crops.
And he had some thoughts on rice.
But I want to talk about it from a policy aspect. What we have seen, you can look at this graph and you can go back there and you can see back when we had a real problem in rice markets about 2007, 2008. And then you can come in here and you can kind of look in between there, reminding you all that the war in Ukraine started in February, actually February 23rd, because it was the night before a major speech that I had to give, which had an outlook for the next year in it, which was wrong after that, right? So I remember the date well. But what you have here is, rice didn't come along for the party, so to speak, in terms of big increases in prices, but all of a sudden now it starts to turn north. Prices of rice have started to increase rapidly. Remember I showed you that in an El Nino, southeast and East Asia tend to be very dry. It's where a lot of rice production occurs, part of the story. The other important part of the story is changes in Indian policy in terms of exports. So the Indians have gone from very modest exporters to taking off a significant share of what is a thin market in global trade for rice. So they've supported their domestic production, they've expanded, then they export the surplus, except when they get nervous. And this year, they're getting nervous and restricting exports. So they've cut their exports. 5.5 million metric tons is about 10% of global trade, a little bit more, that they've cut, and about half of their exports. That's what's driving prices higher. So in terms of being and they did this last year in wheat. So I think we have not gotten out of the woods yet for these type of reactions. I will say I think that these are not the kind of things which are supportive of global food security. When you're an exporter, you have a responsibility to be reliable. And so what you have here is an export control that sends rice prices in the global market much, much higher. And at the same time, who are the people that are dependent on that rice? It's some of the most food insecure in Africa who are the most price sensitive. So you're really transmitting your food insecurity into the rest of the world. So I think we had, during that really strong run in prices related to the war in Ukraine, you get people recommending these kinds of responses. I think these are not good responses in terms of being a reliable and developing export markets, nor are they a good prospect when you think about things about global food security.
Some bottom line comments.
In conclusion here, I think the market's become pretty satisfied with where it's at for corn and beans. I think real risks remain in the global wheat market, and I think real risks remain in the global rice market, which could then kick off problems in other commodities if you have spillover in wheat from countries cutting off supplies of rice. And again, El Nino tends to affect rice, so there is some impetus to see some instability returning to the market, even if it's not in corn and beans.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, USDA has released their September cattle on feed report, and the new numbers indicate cattle and calves on feed for the slaughter market in the U.S. for feedlots with a capacity of 1,000 head or more at 11.1 million head on September 1st. That's 2% below September 1 of last year. And as Gary Crawford reports, the numbers of cattle in our country continue to fall.
USDA is out with its report on cattle feedlot activity during August. No surprises in it.
The numbers line up pretty well with industry expectations.
USDA livestock analyst Mike McConnell, the trade expected lower numbers. That's what they got. August feedlot marketing's down 6% from August a year ago. Placements into feedlots down 5%, leaving the nation's feedlot inventory September 1st at 11.1 million head, down 2%. Mike McConnell says there's nothing in this report indicating any future buildup of the herd. In fact,
overall, the report continues the narrative that supplies outside of feedlots are relatively tight. And that's really what we're seeing in terms of, you know, increasing prices for feeder cattle as the number of both placements and markings are declining year over year.
He mentioned feeder prices. This past week, USDA's benchmark price at Oklahoma City was $249 a hundredweight. Last year at this time, only $174. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. Placements in feedlots, as he said, during August at 2 million head was 5% below last year. Net placements at 1.95 million head. During August, placements of cattle and calves weighing less than 600 pounds were 420,000 head, 600 to 699 pounders at 305,000, 700 to 799 pounders at 455,000 head, 800 to 899 pounders at 488,000, 900 to 999 pounders at 245,000. While 1,000 pounds and greater were 90,000 head. Marketings of fed cattle during August at 1.88 million head is 6% below last year. To learn more about this, simply go to USDA.gov. And a recent Rabobank report says competition between major exporters has intensified in the global pork trade. That means the competitive landscape will continue shifting in the years ahead. Low-cost producers like Brazil and the U.S. will likely have an advantage, while Europe's position is expected to weaken following increasing market and regulatory requirements concerning animal welfare and sustainability. Now, countries adopting effective disease mitigation strategies may secure a competitive edge as disease pressure looms over the pig sector. Meanwhile, global pork consumption is poised for growth until the year 2030. That's creating ongoing opportunities for global pork trade. Rabobank says disease pressure will continue creating challenges in the pork industry, while the impact will be contingent on trade policies and the success of mitigation efforts. The report also notes that despite disruptions, global pork consumption is expected to grow through the year 2030. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
October 12th is National Farmers Day, a time dedicated to those who wake before the sun rises and often work until long after it sets. Thanks to farmers' tireless efforts, we have the food, feed, fiber, and fuel we need here in America and plenty more for export. Best of all, farmers produce all of this sustainably so that future generations can have the same bounty. Today and every day, please join Syngenta in honoring the men and women of American agriculture.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Some important deadlines are coming up for a USDA climate program. Rod Bain has more in today's This Land of Ours report.
The U.S. United Arab Emirates co-chaired Aim for Climate Initiative sponsors a webinar the last week of September on the Food Systems and Agriculture Innovation Agenda, highlighting the upcoming United Nations COP28 ministerial. And as Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack noted at a recent Foreign Policy Food Forum,
there's a deadline for submitting the next iteration of innovation sprints, September 29th. It's also the deadline for new government partnerships. We have 53 countries that are now participating in Aim for Climate.
Dialogue on innovations and progress continues among Aim for Climate partners, according to UAE Minister for Climate Change and the Environment, Miriam Al-Mahari.
To be able to share and say, we've got this innovation here, we've got this seed that works here, this is, for me, the true essence of what Aim for Climate is all about.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McGowan. Fall is when many hunting seasons begin. Do you hunt on others' property or do you have hunters on yours? Have you ever entered into a hunting lease or considered having one prepared for your farm or ranch? If so, what items should be addressed? Perhaps the most important issue for landowners considering leasing their land for hunting concerns potential liability sustained or caused by hunters on the property. All states have some version of a recreational use law, which provides liability protection to landowners that allow others to come on the premises for recreational purposes, which includes hunting. However, under some state statutes, the landowner cannot charge a fee to receive the statutory liability protection. In addition, other statutory requirements may have to be satisfied. A hunting lease is not technically a lease, but rather a license to use the property for hunting purposes. It's a mere contract right to use the property for that specific purpose as defined by the parties. That makes it important for the parties to reduce their understanding to writing and include in the written contract certain key components such as a clear identification of the parties, a property description, the types of hunting allowed and when it is allowed, a termination provision, and any options for renewal, liability waiver, and indemnification language. Of course, payment terms should be included. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McGowan.
Technology brings innovation in agriculture and to your home on the farm, but learning new technologies can be a challenge. AARP Oklahoma State Director Sean Voskel says AARP offers many resources to help.
Navigating new technologies can be a challenge for anyone. That's why AARP offers many resources to help you do so safely and securely. Technology helps us connect with our families from out of town and stay up to date on news, weather, and markets. That's why it's vital that rural residents have access to new technology and the ways it can help.
Voskel says one way to do so while saving money is the Affordable Connectivity Program.
The Affordable Connectivity Program helps low-income households pay for internet connectivity. Their program provides a discount of up to $30 a month for internet or up to $75 a month for those that live on tribal lands. In addition, the program offers a one-time discount of $100 a household on a device. You can access this valuable resource and see if you qualify at getinternet.gov.
Find additional resources and tips on how to best use technology from AARP's Tech Resource Center.
The Tech Resource Center provides many different tips and tricks that can help you harness technology to improve your life. You can find useful apps for your smartphone that can help you save money or even make money. The center offers tips on how to create secure passwords and information on how artificial intelligence can help you in the future. And you can find classes to help you learn new technologies at aarpseniorplanet.org.
Learn more Thursday night at 9 p.m. Central Time on RFD TV or online at aarp.org/AARP Live. Michael Clements reporting.
USDA is extending the deadline to apply for the Discrimination Financial Assistance Program. So just who can apply for Discrimination Financial Assistance? Well, Monica Range, a USDA coordinator for the Discrimination Financial Assistance Program, explains who may be eligible.
This program is designed for farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners who experienced discrimination prior to January 1, 2021. And or are currently debtors with an assigned or assumed USDA farm loan debt that was subject to USDA discrimination prior to January 1, 2021. So if you fall into that category, you are a potential applicant for this program. You may be eligible for this financial assistance.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Grain and livestock futures look to settle back into a range the rest of the week, though a lower range. I'm Mark Oppold with today's bottom line report brought to you by Kloss Equipment and Helena. Helena says next growing season starts right now. Visit HelenaAgri.com to learn more. Grain and livestock futures continue to recalculate after a volatile trade to end last week, and we think yesterday's trade an indication that futures will be range-bound the rest of this week and into October, though a lower range from where we started September. Yield results continue coming in, varied for soybeans especially. Reports over 62 bushels an acre in Illinois, 47-48 bushels in Minnesota. Most of the hardest-hit drought areas yet to be harvested corn or soybeans. Above normal temperatures, by the way, in the northern belt will help those late-planted beans mature. That will add more pressure. Three more cargo ships entered Ukrainian ports after two ships safely passed through the Black Sea corridor. By the way, we hear barge rates in St. Louis went up $10 last week, a result of low water levels. This is the bottom line report. The Kloss Treon 740 Combine has been a big hit at fall farm shows. It's a Class 7 machine that proves bigger, not always better. Learn more at Kloss.com. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
Some USDA grants will help solve workforce challenges. Employers can begin applying for a pilot program designed to improve the resiliency of the food and agriculture supply chain by addressing workforce challenges faced by farmers and ranchers. The USDA and other federal agencies are announcing up to $65 million in grants available for the Farm Labor Stabilization and Protection Pilot Program. The program will help address workforce needs in agriculture, promote a safe and healthy work environment for farm workers, and aims to support expanding lawful migration pathways for workers through expanding the H-2A visa program. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says our country is facing growing agriculture workforce challenges that jeopardize our farmers' ability to be competitive and threaten the resiliency, abundance, and safety of our food system. He says the program will benefit producers and farm workers. Program applications must be received by November 28th. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
There are a number of USDA emergency payment programs for which payments have yet to be made to farmers. However,
you should begin to see a number of payments coming out in the next 30 to 60 days.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack telling visiting National Farmers Union members in Washington Monday to expect emergency relief program payments to go out very soon.
We are focused on trying to get the ERP Phase 2 payments out this month.
Another program still in the works is the Pandemic Assistance Revenue Program.
We expect and anticipate the pandemic assistance payments, which were for folks who suffered losses in 2020, those payments we expect will be the latter part of this month or the first part of October. And then there is the 2022 emergency relief program payments. Application and openings will occur sometime in October.
And for the dairy producers, USDA has just opened the application process for the Milk Loss Assistance Program. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
With Congress deliberating on a farm bill, National Crop Insurance Services visited farmers in the field to hear their stories. Farmers agree crop insurance must be protected and strengthened. In California, National Crop Insurance Services spoke to specialty crop growers who have faced weather ranging from drought to excessive moisture. No matter the challenge or the crop, crop insurance has quickly delivered aid. Sixth-generation farmer Alex Wilson grows pears and cherries and is grateful for the protection provided by crop insurance.
Crop insurance is a tool, definitely a tool that can, especially in natural disaster situations, can make a huge difference for the next year. It can help your operation continue on. I want Congress to know that there are family farms that depend on crop insurance, and crop insurance is a tool that we use to continue on to that next year, to continue on the family farming legacy.
On the other side of the country, farmers on the East Coast shared similar views, including first-generation Delaware farmer Corey Atkins. Corey mainly grows vegetables and small grains. He needs crop insurance to help mitigate the risk of farming and allow him to invest in sustainable farming practices.
I want Congress to know that we have to have crop insurance. I mean, we got to have some way to mitigate that risk, to help, you know, set a floor for farmers. We don't know when we plant the seed in the spring what the outcome is going to be come fall.
These testimonials make it clear crop insurance is essential to America's farmers. You can watch these stories and learn more about the importance of crop insurance at cropinsuranceinamerica.org. Michael Clements reporting.
The past 2 years have seen efforts by the Agriculture Department to expand the capacity of our nation's meat and poultry processing industry to improve market resiliency. That includes Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack's announcement this past summer in Iowa.
I met with business owners to announce USDA's investments in 15 additional nationwide projects that will expand independent meat and poultry processing capacity. One of these projects, Cattlemen's Heritage Beef, will establish a 500,000 square foot facility in Mills County, Iowa. Now, it's projected to process 1,500 head of cattle per day from small, family-owned operations that have been shut out in the past. Now, this plant's going to create over 800 jobs. The average wage will be higher than 90% of the jobs in Iowa today.
Among those supportive of these efforts, Chelsea Good of the Livestock Marketing Association.
LMA agrees with USDA and the cattle industry as a whole that we need more meat processing capacity, more hook space, if you will. And we also agree that we want more competitors in the packing space. It's just a fact that the four largest beef packers have 85% of the fed cattle market space. And we know this as livestock auctions. More people on the seats is more competition.
She notes that all this talk about increased competition in the meat and poultry processing sector has not gone unnoticed by members of the livestock marketing industry.
I've got more and more of our local livestock auction owners interested in investing in a local locker plant or maybe even something regional in nature.
Currently, prohibitions are in place that prevent livestock auctions from owning or investing in meat packing operations. Good, however, sees the benefit, if allowed, of livestock marketers as meatpacker owners and investors, particularly when it comes to the experience of expanding capacity through modernization and marketing. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do we have GMOs? Actually, we've been modifying crops for thousands of years to prevent crop loss from pest and weather damage, to grow more food on less land, even to improve nutrition. Today, GMOs are developed for the same reasons. With genetic engineering, scientists can change and improve crops more easily and quickly. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. For today's interview segment, we pick back up with my conversation with Stanislaus County Farm Bureau's Director of Communication and Outreach, Anna Genasi. We're talking all about a new program that she and the Farm Bureau staff started. It's called Farm Bureau Foodies, and it helps to bridge the gap between the agriculture community and something consumers love, food. Let's talk about, you said that you just secured funding to continue creating these videos for the rest of the year. Let's talk some about, you know, the future of this. Where would you like to see Farm Bureau Foodies grow and maybe what you have in store for the next year or two?
Yeah. So I am really excited to announce Stanislaus County Farm Bureau. We're a nonprofit, but we're a 501c3, right? Because we get involved in the advocacy work, and a lot of county farm bureaus have a separate Farm Bureau Foundation. That's a 501c3 because we're, I think I might've said that wrong. We're a 501c5. We are starting a separate 501c3. And the goal of that is to have all of our agricultural education embodied within that 501c3. So the ag in the classroom work that we do, consumer education, like our foodies, our education for our membership, all of that can go through our 501c3. And for us, that's a huge win because now when I'm out, you know, kind of pounding the pavement, asking folks to support these projects, it becomes a charitable donation on their part. It becomes a tax write-off. I literally have an email flagged in my inbox of somebody who said, let me know when you're a 501c3 and I will start contributing. So you better believe I'm going to hit him up as soon as we get there.
If you're listening.
Yeah, seriously. I would really love, what I envision is a really strong foundation in which we're raising money on a regular basis for education and being able to support Ag in the Classroom activities. California Ag in the Classroom Foundation puts out an amazing little magazine, a little interactive magazine for kiddos called What's Growing On. Like my first goal is to get a copy of that in every third grade classroom in our county. And then send the teacher with, you know, a curriculum idea on how he or she can incorporate it without creating more work for them, because I know how hard our teachers work.
Right.
So, believe me, I'm not trying to make things harder. But I just, that's kind of my dream is Foodies to be a regularly occurring episode, getting our kiddos involved, and then just continuing to be able to be a provider of education for our farmer, rancher, and dairyman members.
So you have three more episodes sort of on the calendar.
Yes.
As far as if folks, you know, they could go to your Facebook page and they can, like you said, tune into the California Bountiful. Do you guys have a YouTube page as well that folks can, you know, grab and share and send it via email or wherever else?
No, you know what? That is something that we've talked about. Right now, the videos live on the Facebook page. Pretty shortly, we're working on creating a website that is incorporated into our Farm Bureau website so that they'll be more easily accessible. So that's kind of where they are now. We of course, share them in our electronic newsletters. And then the other thing I've been trying to do in an attempt to, you know, get out in front of more audiences is sending a press release out to our local newspapers whenever we produce a new episode. Because the other piece of this is, dang it, we should be proud that we grow and produce this variety of commodities here in California, and for us specifically in Stanislaus County. I mean, we are unique in our ability to grow what we grow. I mean, we're just blessed with this climate and soil types. And frankly, not to go off on a tangent, I just went on this water tour. It was amazing. It was a California agricultural water tour. And I'm telling you, the folks that got here before we did, to have that foresight in creating irrigation districts and canal systems that literally keep us alive today, right? In terms of our water accessibility, it's just amazing. And to meet one-on-one with folks who are working hard in the water world right now, I had more hope leaving that tour than I have in a long time. I mean, there are some really good, smart, passionate people doing really great things as they prepare for, you know, Sigma and unreliable rainfall, and just being really thoughtful about local storage projects. And and I, the whole time, of course, my ag communications brain is thinking, oh my gosh, how do we tell the story better? Like, there are people doing amazing, right, forward thinking things. We got to get out in front of this and tell that story. So Joe Consumer, who I always pick on, knows like that, you know, there are people behind that plate of food on your table that are doing really great and innovative things that are sustainable in mind, that are environmentally friendly, that are looking to keep agriculture here.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service is currently reviewing a pest risk assessment for the importation of fresh oranges and tangerines from Egypt. President of the California Citrus Quality Council, Jim Cranny, explained why Egypt's entrance into the U.S. market would be challenging for California growers.
Egypt would be exporting into the domestic market, and obviously that's the largest portion of the California industry's marketing efforts. We do export quite a bit around the world, but the domestic market is really the most important segment. So with that cheaper fruit coming in, we would expect retailers to be bidding down the price, and that would end up being lower prices for growers. And there was a pest risk assessment that was released by APHIS. We commented on it, and now they're considering the comments. So in the course of our communication with APHIS, they've received, you know, a lot of input from our industry, not only from CCQC, but Citrus Mutual as well, and Sunkist. And we've all been telling APHIS that this would be a calamity, really, for the California citrus industry. We don't really know the timing. We're just hoping that they can delay their decision as long as possible. Every season we get, or every part of the season we get, that we're not in this direct competition with Egypt would be beneficial for the industry.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Farm safety resources are available in both English and Spanish. No one can take your place was the theme for this year's National Farm Safety and Health Week. Back in 2021, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported there were 19.5 industry-related deaths per 100,000 workers in the agriculture, forestry, fishing, and hunting sector. Laura Siegel is the Health Communications Officer for AgriSafe Network. It's a nonprofit that helps share farm safety resources and a total health model. She explains more.
all the content we develop is kind of around the Total Farmer Health Model that we created. Total Farmer Health Model looks at not just physical health, but also your social health, spiritual health, in addition to that physical and cognitive. So it's really full circle, well-rounded.
And Siegel reminds farmers the importance of getting enough sleep, especially during busy seasons.
Studies have really shown that operating equipment and machinery and even just being on the farm, being sleep deprived, your brain is almost in the same straight state as if you were drunk. So you have to keep in mind that if you are not getting enough sleep, if you're not well rested, is dangerous for you to be doing that work. So just making sure you're getting enough sleep.
Adding that producers still need to keep themselves in mind and to know their limits and not to overextend them.
Don't hold yourself to impossible standards. Make sure you're able to forgive yourself. We are not machines, and even machines break. You have to make sure that you're giving yourself time to take a break, take a breath, and relax. If you're just go, go, go all the time, you're going to burn out and be less careful.
NAFB contributed to that report.
The second year of the FIRA USA event proved to be a success in Salinas. The event was hosted by the French nonprofit association GOFAR, Western Growers, and The Vine, UC Agriculture and Natural Resources. This year was held at the Salinas Sports Complex, September 19th through the 21st. VP of Innovation with Western Growers, Walt Duflock, said they took what they learned last year to improve this year's event.
So the second year of FIRA USA, we did our first one at Fresno last year, and glad to see you there and glad to see you here, Ryan. What we learned last year was 2 days in a conference room and 1 day out in the fields was great, and we got a great reception, 1,000 attendees, as you remember, way oversubscribed on that. Startups were happy, growers were happy, everyone was happy. Let's do it bigger and better in Salinas. So we added a couple things this year. You can see from the format here, well, you guys are on radio, but we're outdoors, and we're outdoors for all 3 days, so there's no hiding in a conference room this time. There's way more. There's no buses to go to the demo area. The demo area is right here. So we have 3.5 acres of veg demo. We have 1 acre of vineyard demo. We have 0.5 acre of tree demo for orchards, and you can see demos every day for hours at FIRA USA 2023 in Salinas by design. We put you in a room for a couple panels, but for the most part, we want you outdoors seeing the equipment, talking to the equipment operators, figuring out what's going to work for your operation and when you can get it started and when you can get it tested.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.